And, you know, one thing that I was just checking out in the book is talking about some of the amazing festivals that are still immortalized 50 plus years after the fact, Woodstock and Monterey. I'm glad you captured that.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, there were so many festivals in cities all over the United States, in Canada and in England. There were so many of them. But I focus on what I call the big three, Monterey, Woodstock, and Altamont. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that we remember best, not least because these fantastic concert films came out that actually served as almost like social documentaries, you know, of all three films. So Monterey was the first. That was, you know, there's so many.
You see those performances of Otis and Hendrix, I mean, and Electric Flag, right? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
And Ravi Shankar, and, you know, just
everything.
Yeah. And
that scene when Mama Cass is watching Janis perform.
Yes.
And she just looks at her friend, you know, with like the, oh my God, like, I've never heard anything like this.
And I talked to Sam Andrew, who is the guitarist for Big Brother, and, you know, he said that they actually didn't film when Big Brother first played that. They didn't film it. And then Big Brother, like, killed. They just, like, you know, claimed the stadium. And then D.A. Pennybacker's guys went to them and said, like, you got to play another set tomorrow because we need to get this stuff on film, you know.
Right.
And then, yeah, when I think Janis is singing Ball and Chain, and you just see Mama Cass going like, wow, you know, or you see Mickey Dolenz going wow at the end of Ravi Shankar, and the whole world went wow, you know, with Hendrix, you know, like
Wild
the,
Thing,
Wild Thing, but doing the bit with the lighter fluid. And
apparently he wanted out to Pete Townsend, right? That was his inspiration behind that.
Nobody could follow that, really.
Nobody. Who would want to go on after that?
Yeah, and, you know, the Association played that gig, too, believe it or not.
Everybody knows it's windy.
Yeah, but they didn't get in the movie for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. What was the other great Association hit? I mean, obviously, Windy, and even the better one.
Well, my favorite is Cherish. You know,
Cherish is great. Forever My Love?
Never My Love.
Never My Love.
Oh, yeah, that still makes me cry to this day, you know, because I'm a Irishman, so we cry at the drop of a hat. So then Woodstock was, that was 67. In 69, Woodstock happened, and that was like, you know, the apex, you know, like it all came together. You know, they called it 3 days of peace and music, but really it was 4 days. They went into a fourth day.
The Monday.
Yeah.
Where Jimmy played.
And Jimmy played. Shauna played, too. And actually...
This is on the Monday?
Yeah.
So Monday was Shauna and Hendrix? Shauna
and Hendrix went on after Shauna.
Was that it for the Monday? Just those two?
I'm not sure. I know the drummer for the Shauna, I talked to him in Groovy, and he says that Jimi Hendrix was off to the side, like, bopping to it. And I believe it, because Hendrix always played, like, Chuck Berry and old rock and roll. You know?
He got it.
Yeah. He was really into that stuff. You know, he played that Star Spangled Banner, and the place looked like a refugee camp. I mean, it was just like all trash, and where there had been, you know, tens of thousands, there were, like, you know, just thousands, maybe a thousand, maybe
people that were smart enough to stick around for that last day.
Gosh, yeah.
Kind of the Woodstock hangover, and you get that breakfast in bed with Jimi Hendrix playing. I mean, it must have been incredible.
And I think his Star Spangled Banner is like the linchpin of the entire psychedelic period. And then, of course, the nadir was Altamont, you know, mm-hmm. the infamous Altamont Free Concert.
Johansson was there, by the way.
Who was
David Johansson?
David Joe was there.
It was at Altamont? Yeah.
Wow.
And he said that, you know, after the show was over, he was leaving and he saw a van of, you know, classic VW bus. And he said, hey, can I get a ride? He was staying in San Francisco and he wound up getting a ride. And he said he didn't know anything weird went down. He said, he got back to his hotel and he was ordering some food. And on TV, he's like, I didn't even see any of this stuff. He was actually there. He had
I talked to a lot of guys. I talked to two guys in the Stones that played the gig, and Mick Taylor and Bill Wyman. And, you know, Bill Wyman was saying that, like, if you look at the movie Gimme Shelter, you see what they, like, about, like, it looks like about 90 people get into one helicopter, you know. It's just, like, overcrowded, you know. And Bill Wyman says the helicopter went up sideways. It was just, like, so dangerous.
Really?
Yeah, you know. And then Mick Taylor said, if you listen to that show, the Stones are playing in a much faster tempo than usual because they wanted to do the show. They realized that if they saw that there was trouble out there, they realized if they stopped playing, it would have escalated into a full-scale riot. Mm-hmm. So they were determined to finish the show, but they were playing a lot faster.
Wanted to kind of get it over with as well.
Yeah.
They wanted to get out of there.
Yeah. And I always think that was like the symbolic end of the Aquarian Age. You know, obviously when 18-year-old Meredith Hunter was stabbed right in front of the stage during Under My Thumb by Hell's Angel, and it was captured on film, as we all know, and it's the world's, you know, most horrible snuff film, you know. And
didn't he pull out a gun, though?
Oh, yeah. No, he's not blameless.
Right.
No, he's not blameless. It was the Angels weren't blameless either, you know, if you watch the whole movie, you know. And even Paul Kantner said, you know, I never could get Marty Balin on the phone, but he's the guy who jumped off the stage and, like, got into it with the Angels and got punched and knocked out for a few moments. Paul Kantner said Marty Balin was, like, a scrappy guy. Like, his icon was Jimmy Cagney. But even Paul Kantner was doing some risky stuff, he took a mic and said, "I'd like to thank the Angels for punching my my lead singer and knocking him out for a bit." You know, he was always a smart aleck, you know. But that was the nadir, and that was the symbolic end of the Aquarian Age, you know.
The book is groovy. It came out this week. You'll feel like you're reliving the 60s, you know, inspired all by 60s psychedelic culture. You know, great interviews in there talking about 60s TV, you know, some of the album bands, the groovy movies of the 60s, you know, the psychedelic art, as we were just talking about the festivals.
There was four icons of 60s rock that died at the same age, 27, within a 2-year period to the day.
I mean, think about some of the deaths. Brian Jones,
Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and
Jim Morrison.
Yeah. 2-year period to the day, you know, and all at the same age, 27. So it was not a sustainable lifestyle. You know, people were starting to cut their hair, put on straight clothes, and enter the job force. But
they came yuppies in the 80s and made a lot of money.
It was fun while it lasted.
This book just coming out, Groovy, which you can get on Amazon.com or, you know, all the major outlets, Barnes & Noble. I mean, maybe tackling the next decade to follow, the 70s. I'm sure you would do something equally grand.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
That's something that you actually really were embedded in at that point.
Yeah, I could set it at the Philadelphia Spectrum, you know, and just like...
What would be... Set it at the Spectrum. Come on, give us...
The Spectrum, it was so different from the 60s. It was like...
He lives in Eagles Country, people.
Yep, I'm a South Jersey boy, you know. So it was like, you know, there was no babies born, no murders, no mud, you know, no freak out tents. It was safe.
Cars that blew up.
Yeah, it was just, you know, they searched you on your way in for weapons or dope. You know, one night it would be a Flyers game, the next night it would be Blue Oyster Cult.
Right.
So it's fun.
Well, you know, I'm really glad I got a chance to see you. And people, seriously, you're going to love this book, Groovy. Just came out this past Wednesday. Great interviews, all the stuff we were just talking about tonight. If you're an old hippie or you're really infatuated with that timeline, which was such an iconic part of American culture, available now, Groovy. And, you know, you've been helping me out. You brought some great music down tonight as well. I've been having you pick a lot of songs. You got to pick the song that close you out here.
Well, I was thinking Deep Purple.
Yeah. When I think of Deep Purple and I think of Deep Purple fans, I think of the Vogler Brothers.
Yeah,
I think of your brother Brian as well.
Brian, yeah, he's crazy for the perps, you know. But they weren't a psychedelic band. But those first three albums that they did with Rod Evans and Nick Simper on vocals and bass.
Did you like Captain Beyond, by the way?
No, I never got into those.
The first Captain Beyond record with Rod Evans was great. But anyway, sorry.
They were definitely of their time. You know, the Purple sound matured when Ian Gillan and Roger Glover came in. But I love those first three albums. And their first big hit was Hush. And Hush definitely sounds psychedelic, definitely sounds super 60s. Even the production is a little tinny, the way some productions were in the 60s, which just adds to its charm, you know, with an amazing, amazing guitar.
They didn't think it was going to be a hit, right? Because it's an old...
There were a lot of covers. You know what I think Purple was doing? And I didn't ask the guys this question, but just recently when I was listening to everything again, I think Purple was kind of emulating Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah.
Because Vanilla Fudge was doing all these like really heavy covers of like Keep Me Hanging On.
Right.
And then so when you get to those three albums, they do like Help, mm-hmm. but they take the song apart and put it back
Neil
together.
Diamond.
Yeah. So they're
Kentucky Woman.
Yeah, Kentucky Woman, which is great. So I think that they were really leaning heavy on the covers then, and really doing the Vanilla Fudge thing of like strong on the Hammond and just like really heavy.
Mark Voger, my co-host here in the Electric Ballroom. Once again, pick up Groovy. I'm going to wrap it up right now with a Hush from Deep Purple. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Keith. God bless you.
Hello, this is Richie Blackmore, and you're listening to the Electric Ballroom.
Well, I know you enjoyed the trip this evening here in the Electric Ballroom. Great job, Mark Voger, my musical advisor this evening. And everybody pick up his book, Groovy. Totally inspired by the 60s psychedelic culture. Some great interviews in there. Some great stories about 60s television and all the great album bands and the groovy movies and the psychedelic artwork and you know, the festivals that shaped the culture of rock and roll. You heard some great stories from Mark tonight. And you could visualize it in his book, Groovy. Till next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Keith Roth saying, have a good time all of the time. Live it up. It is the Electric Ballroom. Sugar.